Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, the home of cycling. Brought to you by Zwift, where fun is fast. I'm Graham Wilgos. Brad, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Good day in the Giro. Good, certainly a good watch. Victor Campenaerts, a worthy winner.
Yeah, and a worthy guest with us.
Yes, we've got Ola back.
Ola Shenouy.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Welcome back, fresh from the breakaway. Brad, you've mentioned him already. Today's winner, Victor Campenaerts, crossed the line there in a two-up sprint. His face was a picture.
Yeah, it was great to see. I said earlier in the commentary that it'd be lovely to see him try and win again. He's tried so many times. A man who was without a contract at the end of last year. The team just survived. He survived. And it was lovely to see him in something we would expect to be up there in a time trial. But to win a road stage, it's brilliant to watch. And he gives the best interviews. He's the most Belgian man in the world, and he's great.
He's just brilliant.
I love the way he rolls his R's. Yeah. Really, really hard.
And it goes really deep.
I don't know.
I have to point out there's a lot of love for Flemish on the breakaway sofa, isn't there?
I'm Flemish.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Ben Hintenaar.
Yeah. Graham, you say his face is a picture.
His face is always
a picture. That's what I love about him. And he just lays his heart right out there. I think it's wonderful. Laid a bit more out there today than we cared to want to see as well. But it was good to see him crossing the line.
It was. Outsprinted Oscar Riesbeek.
I missed this laying out bit.
Oh, you don't know? I didn't know if you knew what we were talking about earlier.
Did he got his out?
In short.
No, is that right?
He was on the front of the breakaway, right? But this is what I did. He was having a wee.
Right.
But he was at the front. And this is what I find really...
Oh, he was on TV.
He was obviously, he was going to be on TV. So he sort of like undoes his jersey and then lowered his bib shorts. And I just thought, would you not wait? Like, what is the etiquette with that though? Because you're going to know at that stage you're on TV. Eventually the camera did cut away.
Well, Victor's quite renowned for flashing.
But he's just counting on them not showing it when he takes a natural break.
Maybe he thought we couldn't see it.
Well, it was quite obvious what was happening. How long was the clip?
Yeah, how long was the clip?
Long enough.
Let's show sponsored by baguettes.
Let's move this on and take it back to the start of the day, because something else we didn't see was
your run this morning, Greg.
Something else we didn't see, apart from my run this morning, our run this morning.
Yes, it was. It turned into my run, your walk.
Hey, look, I was hungover and we did 5K with you, and that's as far as I was prepared to go.
That's 5K more than I did, and I wasn't hungover.
But that goes against the whole ethos of fun is fast.
It was a very fast first kilometre. Actually, it was lovely to see the guy who came out of the hotel this morning and was...
You made
his weekend. Yeah, you don't often see it though, and it's a nice reminder.
Actually, I'm so accustomed to it.
Yeah. Such a spreader of joy, Bradley. It just comes with the territory of being alive.
I mean, I don't know. Graham witnessed it firsthand, did you, Graham?
Yeah, it was lovely.
He was from Sheffield, and he was just going home to Sheffield with his good lady. And he was a real fan of the show and the sport, and it was great.
Yeah, real fan of yours. I was going to mention before we cut away to our run, the crash that we didn't see, had a huge effect on the start of the race. I mean, it stopped almost before it got going.
Yeah, but Victor was in the breakaway. He's the first man to attack
today.
It was good. You know, good to see him back in. Imagine if he hadn't made it into the second break. I mean, although did they restart them with the break they had? I missed that bit.
No, they restarted as if it was from the start again.
Yeah,
so it's merciful, really, that it didn't have a big effect on the race.
It was to do to the medics, I think. They didn't have enough on site to restart the race safely, which you can understand now. But at the time, there was all this confusion. We didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, a big crash like that, you don't often see so many riders involved.
I think you don't often see so many riders involved, but there can be a lot of riders involved, but they just drop back to the medical car throughout the race, you know, they were all by the second row, they were getting medical attention straight away.
2012, there was a huge crash on stage 8 or 9, I think, when Griper won in 2012 tour, which Cav got stuck behind. He broke his wheel.
Yeah.
And it was about 15K to go. And there was about 40 riders went down. Much like the other tour where Cancellara and those guys, do you remember when they all crashed in yellow? And
yes.
Yeah. And obviously the race carried on from those ones, didn't they?
Flying into the ditches. That was horrendous. That was about the worst I've seen. Yeah. The worst
it was the Corsican stage, do you remember, where they tried to shorten the race on stage one and it was going to be a sprint, and they brought the finish line 3K early and then decided at 10K to go, no, actually, we're going to go.
That was when the green edge bus drove into the finish line.
That was that day. Yeah, yeah.
And
all
Geraint
the drama.
Broke his pelvis that day.
Yeah. And rode all the way to Paris.
Yeah. I can remember talking to David Miller about crashing in the peloton and him saying that it's a really eerie, or it can be a really eerie place to be because it's so quiet. You've got riders, first of all, checking themselves over to make sure they're okay. They're okay to continue. But they also, a lot of the time, don't want to show that they're injured because they don't want to give anything away to their rivals.
There is that.
But they also don't want to be pulled from the race. You've worked so hard.
Yeah,
particularly
exactly.
So many riders, it's your first grand tour. Well, you've worked so hard to be
choice,
there.
You know, I mean, I crashed out in 2011 in the tour. That was a big pile up.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it does happen more frequently. It's only, I think, because they're traumatic things to watch, you tend to not, you know, in recall, psychologically, you forget about them. And actually, the more you remind yourself, there's actually quite a lot of it in cycling.
You don't often see a race stopped. I think that's the thing.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
I actually
don't remember the last time we've seen a race stopped from a crash.
But I do think they're probably stricter on the medical side of it now. You know, when you say in David Miller's day, maybe it was more of a thing to try to hide the extent of your injury so you could keep on riding. I think they're much more hot on that now. And if you look at the likes of Jos van Emden today, the Jumbo Visma rider, it was absolutely horrific. The poor guy was, it looked like he was crying. He could barely breathe. That kind of thing, obviously, you're not going to get back on the bike again, but terrible.
Van Emden, one of the riders to leave the race today. Giacomo Nizzolo didn't start. We understand he's got other priorities.
I guess the Tour de France and trying to win green.
That's what it sounds like, right?
Chance,
So
that should be some balance.
Not the same criticism, though, as Caleb Ewan got. No. Anyone else got that same
no,
level?
It's funny, that, isn't it? Yeah.
I guess he was, Caleb Ewan was first and highest profile to go among the sprinters.
And in the Chicamino.
And in
New Jersey. Highest profile casualty, Emmanuel Buchmann for Bora.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. So he's out. He was in the top 10, wasn't he? And he's gone home. He looked like they were giving him quite a thorough scan over. So I can only assume it was loss of consciousness or something like that, really. So concussion.
Changes the race for Bora now. They've got one card to play.
Yeah. I mean, but Sagan's won his stage. He's clearly here for preparation for the tour. I think he's going to be a hot property at the tour. And maybe trying to win the Chicolomino jersey. But although I imagine that's not a big goal for him, really, is it? Here, the tour is a bigger fish to fry.
You would think so, but then I wonder how it plays out when he's got the likes of Sam Bennett defending green and looking so strong this season already.
Yeah,
I mean, it's nice to have, and I guess there are so many rivals that have dropped now. There's one more sprint left, really.
Yeah.
So if he hangs on, it's probably his, and you know, it's good to amass another jersey in your collection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ineos gunning it on the front, but not all of them. Only two riders,
yeah, which is the norm, you know. Any big squad like that, you watch out over the years, you only use those guys won't be expected to play a part tomorrow, and you can't imagine them playing a part, especially after today. You know, again, Eddie's three stalwarts behind him and around him yesterday, today, that will be ready for tomorrow, and that's their big day. And the pace was taken up by Filippo Ganna and Puccio. So they did a lot on the front today, and they kept that group around 12 minutes all day, the two of them against 14.
And I know they would have been working hard anyway, but I just wonder how much harder they had to work because Bora were out of it.
Yeah.
Because you would have expected Bora to jump on the front, to share that workload a little bit, maybe take over depending on how the race panned out for Peter Sagan. With Buchmann out of the race, they clearly changed their plans. So, I mean, I can't imagine with the likes of Puccio and certainly not Ganna, it's going to affect them too much. You know, they're absolute machines. But I think maybe they would have had a slightly harder day than they would have planned.
Yeah. But they would have sent two riders up Bora as well. Yeah. So you'd have had two riders from Bora and two riders.
Mm.
You know, the whole team wouldn't have took it up, but they'd certainly sent two up.
Puccio was the other rider alongside Ganna that we saw a lot of today. He rode for you, didn't he?
He did, 2013. Yeah, he's a great lad.
Yeah.
We had Dario Cataldo was in the team also when I rode 2013. And I had with a view to winning the pink jersey in Milan that year, of course. The team time trial was stage 4 or 5. And I was firing, really. It was when I was most at home in the time trials and that course alone. Cataldo said to me afterwards, you know, you probably could have gone faster on your own. I think we won by 2 or 3 seconds, the team time trial. So we won the stage. And before it, we'd won the stage in the Giro del Trentino, which is now the Tour of the Alps. And so we knew we could win the stage. We knew we'd beat sort of Liquid Grass Squad. And I said to, you know, I'd planned obviously to take pink later on in the race. I'd already worn the pink in the Giro, so I wasn't too bothered about wearing it early that in the tour. And I said to Cataldo, you know, you can take the pink jersey if you want, being in Italy. You know, he'd been pretty good in before that with Quickstep and stuff like that. And obviously he's now an older rider in the peloton, but he hit the front too early in his panic and desperation to get to the line. And obviously that detracts from trying to win the stage, but we knew we'd won the stage. And he just ran out of legs because we're doing 65K an hour. And he came through 300-400 meters to go make sure he crossed the line first, because the first riders from the team that crosses the line takes the jersey. And in his running out of legs, Puccio came over the top of him and took the jersey himself. And ensued this big, abbiamo attaccato del muro, vici su Maglia Rossa. And we'd won the stage and these two are arguing. He's going, sorry, man, sorry.
You know what? I love about that day, because I was there. It was in Ischia, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we had to get we had to get the ferry across at the end of that day. It was a brutal transfer. But I remember thinking, oh, that was so perfect, because Dave Brailsford then sold that as the perfect pink ribbon on the parcel. And he said, oh, we all planned at the start of the day. We timed it so that Puccio would be the last across the line, so we'd have an Italian in the pink jersey.
Yeah.
So we all bought it, hook, line, and sinker. No, I didn't realise.
It was Cataldo. Puccio was first year professional. He's never won a race since.
I was going to come on to this because
he's worn the pink jersey in the Giro.
He's
Cataldo's gone on to win a stage, hasn't he, 2 years ago, I think. But he's never worn pink, so it worked out all right, did it?
Yeah.
Ollie, you mentioned getting the ferry at the end of the stage there, because I know we talk a lot about transfers at the end of stages for riders and the impact that can have, but sometimes for the press and the people covering the race.
You were there, were you?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. I covered the whole race.
Did you interview me afterwards? Must have done.
No, I don't think we did that day. No. You weren't in the pink jersey. We didn't care.
No.
I'm joking. Standard, you
know. Well, it was normally when I wasn't doing well that you spoke to me.
That's when we were in your face. Yeah.
But it can be logistically almost impossible.
That Giro d'Italia, that was my first ever Grand Tour that I did from start to finish. So I'd done the Giro, I'd done the Tour de France a few years, but that was the first one I did start to finish. And that year in particular, the transfers were absolutely brutal. So that was the first week. And I remember, you know, you've got a really long day anyway. So you've got to get up early, get to the finish before, like way before the stage starts. You're there until after it all finishes, after the buses have all left. And that evening, I remember, like, it was just one car ferry that went between Ischia and the mainland. And it was a tiny little island. Remember, they had to limit the number of vehicles even that were allowed onto the island. But even with that, the queues, I remember, to get onto the ferry just went on for what felt like an eternity. And of course, they prioritised all the riders. So all the teams are, you know, waving off the back of this ferry as we're sitting in the queue until sundown. And then the next day was a really long day, I seem to remember, because it was a really early start. And for some reason,
I think we had a 3-hour drive off the bus.
We did, off the other side. Yeah. And so by the time that we got to where we were supposed to be that night, it was something like 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning. And we were staying in this holiday camp. It was really weird. I couldn't understand why we were there. But anyway, they kept reception open just for us arriving. And they gave me my room. And I was walking through this holiday camp at like 2 in the morning with these suitcases that I'd packed for 3 full weeks on the road, trying to find this blinking room. I got to the room and opened the door. And there was somebody already there. And I was like, oh, this isn't my room. Went back to reception. Reception had closed by then. So I was almost in tears trying to walk around the bar in my pigeon Italian, finding anyone who could give me a key to a new room. I nearly went and slept on the cameraman's floor when finally I managed to get someone who could give me a new room. And yeah, and then we ended up starting at like maybe 9 in the morning the next morning. So I got about 4 hours sleep. And that was week one of my first Grand Tour.
Yeah.
Absolutely brutal. Mm. It was a brutal finish to the end today as well. Sort of apocalyptic conditions in the rain. How did you go in the rain, first of all, Brad?
I went well sometimes. I mean, Paris-Nice a few. I mean, I always had. Yeah, I mean, just particularly that Giro, I think it reflected my mood and state sort of. How happy I was off the bike, really. I think other than that time trial, which I sort of excelled in, the rest of the time, I think it reflected my mental stability off the bike, and it was pretty poor. So I think that's why I kind of had me wobble on the descents and things, particularly in the rain.
Mm. So plenty of wobbles from Campanats and Respeak towards the end as they were trying to put a gap into each other.
Yeah. And that's what it's like. You know, I think we saw Balcom Molymer go down.
Yeah, I was going to say. He nearly, I couldn't believe it.
He saved it, didn't he?
He seemed to be looking over his shoulder. One of his wheels slid out and he managed to
almost seemed like he did a 360. Incredible. But the two in front, they got the gap with sort of less than 10 kilometres to go. Who did you fancy at that point?
I didn't think Victor was as quick in
the
sprint.
No, I didn't. No. None of us did, actually. And you've got to feel for Rijsbeek, because afterwards you could see he was, you know, thumping the handlebars at a standard practice. But he gave an interview immediately afterwards in Dutch where he said that was a once in a lifetime opportunity and I made a mistake because obviously he went too early.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, after 15 days of racing, this is really hard and I'm out of words. And I always think cycling is so fascinating almost for the stories of the people who didn't make it, you know, and someone like him, you've got to feel for him that he's not a big name in the sport. You know, this is his one chance to get his name in the history books. It might come back again, of course, but yeah, really sad for him because they looked like, I thought they could have been playing silly buggers for a bit and they might have allowed the group behind to catch them. They didn't. They stayed out front. They played it perfectly. And then it was, you know, man against man, but he just went too early. Yeah. So, yeah.
He went too early. Campenaerts went over the top of him. This is how Rob Hatch called it for us on Eurosport and GCN+.
As if we didn't need any more nerves and tension. The next attack has to be the definitive one for them. Behind, they keep riding. Campenaerts, who doesn't have a Grand Tour stage win yet. He's tried and tried and tried. For Rijsbeek, this is his Grand Tour debut and an opportunity to become a household name backing his native Netherlands. 500 metres now. It's on those wet cobbles in the middle of Gorizia. They come downhill. They take it gingerly, nervously. 350 metres. Campenaerts being forced to lead this one out. Final turn coming up now, and Rijsbeek is on the wheel and ready to jump. And here we go. It's Rijsbeek in that navy jersey who sprints. Rijsbeek being followed by Campenaerts. Hermans taking them in behind, but they're going for third place. Rijsbeek is there. Campenaerts is in the wheel. Can he come around him? They're coming up to the finish line. Campenaerts is going to hit the front. Campenaerts comes to the front. He's done it in the sprint. Ubuntu, they have done it. I am, because we are. A hat-trick for Kubeka Assos, and the teamwork they talk about has pulled off the win again. Victor Campenaerts wins stage 15 of the Giro d'Italia.
Orla, you've mentioned this already. It's Kubeka's third victory in 5 days, third victory of the Giro. I don't think any of us predicted this.
I don't think they predicted it, even from their Twitter feed after the win today. It was full of exclamation marks and capital letters, and they could barely believe that they'd done it. You know, this is a team that was so close to folding at the end of last season that we had all written them off. You know, we just thought that was it, that they were out of the sport. And I find it really endearing, actually, and really telling that in his interview afterwards, and we, you know, we laugh really affectionately with Victor Campenaerts when he goes
through, because we love it.
Because we do love it, but he goes through his whole story and it, you know, he gives you so much. But in the middle of it all, you know, he's thanking Douglas, as he called him, Doug Ryder, the team boss, and talking about Kubeka, the charity. You know, it's a South African charity that's about giving bicycles to people who need them. They're the first African team to have raced the Tour de France. Their history and their reason for being are very, very important, obviously, to that team, because every one of them who crosses the line first, they've got their five, they keep saying the five fingers, but, you know, four fingers and the thumb in the air. It's all about that teamwork, and that's part of their whole team motto, you know. It's,
which they've got back since Bjorn Riis left, haven't they? They've was it Bjorn Riis? Was it that team last year?
No.
Right. No.
Although Brian Smith was there.
No, he took over.
He was with...
another team.
Who went with Cav?
Lisa Longbrigham's team.
Barry Merida.
No, I'm sure Bjorn Riis took over last year, and he's left there. But they've gone back to that ethos, which is what the team started.
Yeah, it's sort of when Dimension Data were co-sponsoring, lost a little bit of that, didn't they?
They did lose that identity, they lost it. And it's brilliant because that is now steeped in history, particularly when Steve Cummins won, of course.
Yeah.
On Mandela Day.
On Mandela Day.
Giacomo Nizzolo, we saw break his duck and win a sprint. Mauro Schmidt as well, winning the stage into Montalcino. They're not only having the most successful Grand Tour we've seen since the days of Steve Cummings, but they're also increasingly the most likable team in the peloton.
Yeah, I think so. And they've got great sponsors like Asos and that, and I nearly said ASOS. no, Asos, because Asos are like, you know, they're a great brand that have been, you know, kind of involved in cycling for so many years, going back to Freuler and Del Bundi and all those guys in Swiss cycling, and it's great.
Bradley, I have to say you're right. Johnny Rhys was with NTT. Yeah,
Keep all that in, please.
He was less than a year.
And they lost their identity a bit when he was in.
Yeah, you're right. Because, of course, it was NTT right. Pro Cycling.
You made me question
it?
Myself. Then.
Yeah. No, bang on the money. Yeah.
There we go. Because Bjarne Rhys came in and Bjarne, you know, they lost that identity even more so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there you go. I knew I was right.
Schooled.
Always right. The reason it's your show.
There's a reason for that, Greg.
We've mentioned Victor Campenaerts' interview. It's worth hearing again, even if you heard it on TV earlier. Now. Here it is now.
It was just an amazing day with the team. We don't have the guys in the team that will do the uphill finishes, and the coming days are extremely hard. So we decided to go all in today, ride as one. Ubuntu, I am, because we are. We gave everything what we had from the first kilometers. Quite a dramatic start with a big crash in the beginning, and we were already in front with half of the team, and we restarted the race. We did the same thing, and the rest was just fantastic. I have to say, Lucas and Max had 100% faith in my performance. Gave a little bit of pressure, but I'm so happy to finish this off. And the guys both also did the same crazy result for a team like ours, Quebeca, Asos. This is fantastic. We have a Giro with three victories. We struggle to stay alive as a team, but we managed to stay alive. We are looking for a big sponsor, and I think with three victories in the Giro, we make a great statement. We are racing for a greater purpose. We will always race for a greater purpose, no matter what sponsor will join the team. But we hope we will have this sponsor and stay alive for a long, long time, and make bicycles change lives, bring bicycles in Africa to give chances for better education and a better life.
Zwift is the world's training playground, Brad, where fun takes you further, recreating the outdoor feel of riding on an indoor trainer, something you can get on board with, I think.
It does, yeah, and Zwift have done it very well, and they're now the leaders, aren't they, in that world, and they've got the likes of Geraint Thomas on board, and, you know, probably can't get...
Your old mate, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, they did some involvement with Team Wiggins a few years ago. We joined in one of their shops, Pinarello shop races one night, and... My son uses it. I watch him during the winter months. It's something I wish I'd had when I was 15. Definitely, just to, from a safety point of view, when you didn't want to let your kids out on the road in the dark.
And anyone can use it. So it, you know, you don't have to be G. You don't have to be a pro. You can train with thousands of real people.
Yeah. Like, you can train with anyone. You can ride with anyone from the world of pro cycling, or from your workplace or school, whatever age you are.
Brad, like you say, most of the pros on the world tour train on Zwift.
Yeah, hop on anytime, heart pumping, intense cycling, join group rides, events, and worldwide races.
Zwift has 9 worlds too, including the stunning Paris and France maps. They've recreated Tour de France stages, which gives everyone a chance to experience them. You don't have to have been Bradley Wiggins to experience what it's like to ride at the Tour de France. You can hit your kilometres with virtual dinosaurs, raging waterfalls. You can be inside a volcano, James Bond-esque, a wide open California desert. Plus, you can tour London landmarks.
All you need is a bike, trainer, and Zwift app.
You can get a free 7-day trial, Brad, no strings attached, at Zwift.com. Welcome back to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, sponsored by Zwift, where fun is fast. Slow sufficed for, in the end, George Bennett's main man, the domestique, dragging the breakaway for what felt like most of the stage yesterday, Eduardo Affini. And then Bennett, having got to the top of the Zonkerland and finishing in the top 10, then decided to ride down the Zonkerland, because obviously you have to off the mountain. There's no transfer from the top of the mountain. And then rode back up with Affini as a way of saying, look, I really appreciate the effort you put in for me today.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't realise that until today. I saw a picture of it. I think that's really beautiful, isn't it?
Afeni was still riding.
Afeni was still riding, sort of pulled off at the bottom of the Zonkalan. So then Bennett came back down and then rode up the Zonkalan with Afeni.
And then good on George for doing that.
Yeah.
He's a top lad. But I'm actually amazed that someone didn't take offence to that, like the race organisers, and do something. Because is he aiding him doing that?
Good question. Yeah. Good question. Well, that's what I was saying whenever Afeni dropped.
Richard Port, do you remember the wheel a few years ago?
Yeah.
And was it George? It was someone else, actually. It was another guy, wasn't it? Richie got given a wheel by a green edge rider.
Yeah.
And docked, you know.
But that's what I was wondering about Afeni yesterday, because he came to an absolute standstill, as you would imagine, after the effort he put in. And he still had 13 kilometres of the Zonkalan to do. And I thought, man, if he misses a time cut after that, that would be brutal.
Yeah.
See, I don't know.
But then it's the Zonkalan, 20% plus at the top there. And Bennett's done it once. He's had two top 10 finishes in 3 days. He's trying to ride himself to enough distance anyway
to be able to go for a stage one, isn't he? So maybe if he gets himself tired for a few days, he'll have a go in the last week.
Exactly. Another detail we might have missed because we've been so focused on the Giro is, first of all, Anna van der Breggen taking the stage at the Vuelta Burgos Feminina today and the overall. But I think particularly heartwarming in the same way that Campanats's win was today was Cecily Uttrup-Ludwig, probably the most charismatic rider in the men's or women's peloton, even more so than Campanats.
Certainly one always of the most loved, isn't she?
Yeah, always a joy in interviews, no matter where she finishes. But brilliant to see her take a stage in her first World Tour win, Orla.
Yeah, such a popular win. And it's been coming this season. I think because of her charisma, because of the way she gives her interviews, there's been a lot of pressure on her almost. And she's an intelligent woman. She knows that. And she doesn't want to, I think, play up that kookiness of herself too much because she knows she's got to back it up with results. But this season, certainly, it's been looking like a win is coming for Cecily. And to see it yesterday, it was so popular. You know, my Twitter was awash with people just absolutely delighted for her. And that's exceptional. You know, we don't get that very often. The fact that it was her first professional win was just absolutely brilliant. So, hugely delighted for her. Grace Brown took the first stage of that. And she's been really impressive this year as well because she's taking over essentially from Annemiek van Vleuten at Bike Exchange. And that's her second win this season. But Anna van der Breggen, this fascinates me, Bradley, and I'd like to ask you about this because she's just won her seventh Flèche Wallonne, for example. You know, she's won again. She's winning this season. She's aiming for the Olympics once again. She's a defending champion. Regardless of what happens, she is insisting that that's it. She is retiring at the end of this season. She's going to become a DS. She's 31, I think it is, compared to Van Vleuten, who's maybe, I think she's maybe 36, 37.
37, 38, I think.
She's got another Olympics in her. Sure.
Well, this is it. You would think she's got another Olympics. But this is the holy grail of athletes, isn't it? To retire when you're at the top, to go out with a bang. Yeah. That must be so hard, though, when you're still beating the best in the world.
Yeah, but it's getting more competitive, isn't it? I wondered, was she planning on stopping last year, but the Olympics got moved, so she's extended by another year already?
I think it was always going to be this year.
I
would need to double check that, but I think it was always going to be this year.
Yeah.
Because she announced, I would need to look at that. But to say that regardless of what happens at the Olympics, you know, if she wins the Olympics, if she wins the World Championships, what are you're the defending champion and that's it. You're not in competition.
I know,
it's fascinating.
But,
but
I'm still
really
Olympic champion today.
And
I think it's... I've been Olympic champion for 16 years, you know, and it's... I think it's something... When you've been as successful as she is... She probably doesn't want to go out any other way and realizes how hard and what it takes to be at that level. And if there's any question mark about, can I do another year? Can I keep this up? Then I think that's probably the time to go. You have to respect, I always respect someone's opinion that wants to, you know, call it a day, but whether it's out, she might not win, but you know, I don't know. I don't know whether she'll be swayed at this stage, particularly with the Tour de France coming.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
I mean, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Because wouldn't it be a lovely thing to go out and win the inaugural Women's Tour de France and then hang up?
Yeah.
I wonder whether she could be swayed off the news of that just a few weeks ago.
We'll be back with more from the Bradley Wiggins Show after this. Lacquer's collective cover is made especially for cyclists. This is bicycle insurance made for everyone, from Grand Tour winners to cyclists hitting the pedals for the first time. Lacquer has transformed traditional insurance with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month,
meaning you could pay nothing if nobody claims. Your max monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Claims are handled by LACA's team of cycling experts and usually agreed within a day, with no depreciation or excess. The Bradley Wiggins Show listeners can get their first 30 days free. Head over to www.laca.co and sign up using the code Wiggins.
Welcome back to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport. Brad, looking forward to tomorrow's stage 16 into Cortina, the Queen stage, the highest point in the race, the Cimo Coppi. Yeah. Monster of a stage in the Dolomites, 6,000 metres plus of climbing.
Yeah.
We expect to see a shake up in the GC, particularly because we've got some brutal conditions forecast.
Yeah.
What do you think? How do you see it unfolding?
Well, it goes over 2,000 metres three or four times tomorrow. You've got the Jao Poy Doi. It's a tough one. And finishing Cortina, weather's not going to be great. They're already predicting sort of heavy rain at times. And when you go over 2,000 metres, I think Poy Doi, the Jao, is definitely over 2,200, 2,300 metres. That altitude's going to suit the likes of Bernal, Simon Yates. I think I can actually predict that the GC tomorrow will be Bernal, Yates and Hugh Carthy climbing onto the podium.
Hugh's 2 minutes and 11 seconds behind.
But he's only 20 seconds off of that podium.
Yeah. So it's Alexander Vlasov and Damiano Caruso ahead of him. Orla, who do we need to see something from apart from Hugh Carthy tomorrow?
Simon Yates.
Yeah.
We've got to see something from him because, you know, he gave that interview yesterday where he said, I'm not going to go into detail, but I haven't been great in the first week. That means we would suspect he's finding form again. Yes, we've got a huge week of climbing in the last week, but this is the Cimo Coppi. It is the Queen stage. This is psychological as well as physical. And I think we need to see something from Bike Exchange as well. Mm. We need to see his team around him a little bit more because I've expected a bit more from them, really. And I just think, you know, he goes into tomorrow, what is he, 1 minute 33 off Bernal. He can't really afford to let Bernal take more time than that tomorrow. I mean, he can, obviously, with a week of climbing and anything can happen in one single climb. But if he's to be challenging for the overall, I think tomorrow is the day that we need to see something for sure.
Brad, how do you approach it as a GC rider?
Depends which GC rider you are. Mm-hmm. Ineos are going to ride. They've made that intent clear today, really. I think they would just look. Bernal's got 130, hasn't he, over Simon Yates. I don't think Simon's going to attack Bernal tomorrow. He might try something on the Jao with a descent after that, but I think there'll be a decent break in the morning. There'll be 15, 16 guys, and then they'll take up the pursuit behind.
What do you think Yates will do?
Well, I think that they'll wait as long as possible for that last week. Mm. And I think that Matt White will want the likes of Dan Martin, we were talking about, Education First, Hugh Carthy, the guys further down, Vlasov, to like the way Astana rode the other day, them to try something from behind to dislodge the podium places. So Vlasov to move onto the podium, if you like, or Ciccone and people like that, and profit from the disorganisation of that happening and isolating. So if Ineos are chasing all these guys down that are attacking, then they want to isolate Bernal. Yeah, no, I don't think Whitey's squad will do that. They'll want everyone else to do that and then have numbers over Ineos at some point.
The thing to remember about tomorrow is because it's a Queen stage and because it's a Cimo Coppi, we're all thinking it's in the climb, but it's a massive descent to the finish. And if the weather plays a part with this, it could be a totally different kind of stage to the one that we're thinking of in our heads. You know, there's a climb for the last 1K, it goes back uphill again, but you've got that huge descent potentially in the wet or the snow that could be really decisive.
That's where
more
Bernal
so
might
than
struggle.
The climbs. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Bernal could get very cold up there, but they all will. And I think Simon will handle that the best. Mm-hmm. Simon and Hugh, actually. And if you remember a few years ago, I think 2016, where Stefan Kreuzvik looked like he was wrapped the race up. And on the descent of the Garvey, he crashed into a snow wall.
Yeah, went head over heels, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. So anything can happen tomorrow. And Bernal, the altitude's great, but if it's -2 up there and snowing, then he's going to, he'll struggle more than most.
Yeah. Bike Exchange, they just seem to have fallen away every single time the heat's on. Whitey, surely he's, you know.
He doesn't have the. Yeah, I don't know.
What does he need to say to them?
I think they've looked better at times. I think there's clearly something going on in that team at the start of the race, which is what Simon's referring to. I don't know. We're going to try and get an interview with Matt White at some point. It's whether he gives much away. I'd wait. Hold tight on that one till tomorrow. I think when we sat in 24 hours to see what the result is. I think they're planning something big. Whether that comes tomorrow or not, remains to be seen.
I think sometimes we look at the likes of Ineos and even the way De Koenig were racing at the start when they had two race leaders and then one race leader. We look at those teams or like Jumbo-Visma last year and we say, why is no one else doing that? As if it's an easy thing. I think sometimes we are misled slightly by the dominance and the prowess of certain teams and think that other teams need to raise their game or they're doing something wrong. There's a reason those teams are winning, you know, because they're the best and they're the best at it. And it's maybe, I just don't know if it's fair to say that other teams are getting anything wrong or falling away. That's just how things sift out. You know, that's how the sand sifts through, really.
Do we expect Bernal to put, if all goes well, do we expect him to put the race almost out of sight overall tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, it depends, really. Yeah, I mean, it depends what happens in the race for that to, you know, if he's got 5 minutes at the end of the day, then yes. But I can't see him attacking on the jowl and then descending in. He'll want to maintain. I don't think he'll push the envelope out too far. If he's got 1:30 tomorrow night, that'll be success. Because the hard stuff's still to come, you know, that last couple of days.
I can see him doing the same thing that we saw him do with Yates on the Zonkerland. And just wait. He doesn't have to push it. He can just wait until someone else decides to.
Maybe
and
then, at the end or on the
But
jam.
Also, I think he would be putting it out of sight if it was an uphill finish. Yes, but it's not.
He's not.
You know, it's that final descent that's going to be absolutely crucial. And obviously they'll know that in terms of trying to play it safe and make sure that at least they stay upright. But I can't see him putting it out of sight tomorrow. I can't. I can't see how he'll be able to get enough of an advantage on that final climb that he can maintain that and control that all the way down the other side. You know, you'd imagine he'd need teammates to do that if he's going to actually try to gain time in the descent. That's a massive ask. You know, the likes of Nibali can do that.
He doesn't need to.
No, he doesn't need to. Exactly. So, as Bradley says, if he's got that 1:33 at the end of tomorrow and he stayed upright and he hasn't, you know, taken any bruises, then that will be good. And then he's got, you know, the uphill finishes where he can finish it off.
Last point then. Give us a prediction. Stage winner tomorrow.
I think the break will go. Oh, it's a real tough one, though.
Yeah.
Quite fancy Bauke Mollema.
Yeah, you think?
He's been present. Yeah, Gaviria.
you've
Gaviria
been banging this drum
every day.
All week.
The one day you don't mention Gaviria, he's going to win. You know that.
Ola?
Oh, man, it's a really, really hard one. I think it's going to be Breakaway. Scrap that. Right, so we've had 15 stages. We've had 8 Breakaway wins. We've had, I think, 9, did I write earlier? First-time Giro winners. I think it's going to be an old guard. I'm actually going to nick Bradley's love here. Why not? Vincenzo Nibali.
Oh, I was going to say
it's
this.
It's going to be someone who can monster it on a descent. Sod it. I'm going to go with my heart. Let's go Nibali.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, because he's just quietly almost been in neutral the last couple of stages.
And he's got nothing to lose in that descent, does he?
Yeah.
Nothing to lose.
But that's obviously if, don't hit the fan up the first few times.
Yeah.
All right, well, we look forward to finding out. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, brought to you by Zwift, where fun is fast. Orla, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Where can we find you on social media?
Find me lurking in a dark corner under @sportsorla on Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. Brad, thanks again.
There we go.
So here we go. Yeah, too easy. You can follow Eurosport on Twitter @Eurosport_UK. Plus, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook.
You can do.
Thanks to our producer, Podcast Pete.
Podcast Pete.
Podcast Pete, sponsored by River Island.
Pete Burton. And finally, from me, Graham Wilgos, it's goodbye. If you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, share your thoughts, and rate us. Brad, see you tomorrow.
Ta-ra.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.